Good morning, it's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we have an action-packed show for you today. Going to catch you up on the latest and greatest of the world of the automobile. A lot of motorsports going on this weekend, Formula One, NASCAR. We'll catch you up on all those things. A little story about a classic motorsports movie going to be remade with a part two, so we'll talk about that. A big recall for Ford. Some news about Cadillac and revolving in V8 engine. We like that. And a very classic Chevelle that's going up for sale. And it's a very special Chevelle. Of course, we'll talk about gas prices. And oh my goodness, they keep going up and up again. And of course, it wouldn't be The Car Show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on The Car Show. Well, from the pages of Autoblog, the headline reads, "The 450 horsepower King of Chevy Muscle crosses the block this weekend." Well, it boasts a one-year-only engine that most rivals, well, they would have never been able to answer. And this is a very, very special car. Well, at Mecham Auction this weekend, well, their main attraction at the Harrisburg sale on at the course this weekend, and it should earn such a billing, the car is a 1970 Chevrolet SSLS6, the high point of the American horsepower wars, finished in tuxedo black with white stripes, backed with that one of a kind documentation that separates this real car from a tribute car. Well, the story is GM is pulling out all the stops. Well, for years, GM capped its engine size in its midsize cars. By 1970, with emission rules and insurance surcharges and efficiency standards all closing in, the company scrapped that rule and dropped the biggest engine that would fit in this Chevelle's bay. As a result, well, a 454 cubic inch LS6 rated at 450 horsepower and widely believed to make more horsepower than was rated. At the time, the most powerful factory engine at its time and placed the Chevelle SS at the very top of the muscle car market. Alas, Chevy dropped the LS6 after just 1 year, which makes the 1970 a one-year proposition and a car that was a snapshot of a peak era of horsepower wars and pony cars. The numbers, 450, backed by the paper. Well, the drivetrain, one enthusiast's dream of a 450 horsepower 454 LS6, paired with a Muncie 4-speed manual, a 410 Posi traction rear end. The equipment included power steering, power brakes, cowl induction, headrests, correct 5-spoke SS wheels on a reproduction Goodyear polyglass raised white letter tires. While the rarity makes the Chevelle a hot ticket item, it's also accompanied the documentation that elevates it to a top billing. Just 4,475 LS6 engines were built for 1970 across the Chevelle and the El Camino car plans, with experts putting the two-door Chevelle count at well under 4,000. This car is backed by a claim of two original build sheets, including a second copy was found tucked under the front seat. Any listing in the LS6 registry, the car was on display at Carlisle in 2020 for the engine's 50th anniversary. Now, the car has been repainted once in its factory tuxedo black over a black vinyl split interior, still wears its original body panels. Now, the broader muscle car market has softened over the past few years, but a blue chip, fully documented cars have held firm, and in some cases they have actually claimed and climbed in value. The registry lists the LS6 with two build sheets at exactly the same car. Once headlined of a 1,200 car sale, it is going to be the clearest one that is at the top of the sheet. The takeaways? Well, if one car defines the peak of the horsepower wars and the value of honesty, honest paperwork, this car coming across the block this weekend is that car. Yeah, this was always the hot ticket. People were talking about this big monster 454 engine, and some people claim that this car makes almost 500 horsepower. That's how much the horsepower numbers were undervalued at the time. Speaking of American muscle, the headline reads, "The next Cadillac CT5 will offer a naturally aspirated V8 with a manual transmission." That's right, a Cadillac with a manual transmission. Well, the Cadillac sedan replacement rumor mill has been going full tilt this week, and we're prepared to add a little bit more fuel to the fire. A top Cadillac salesperson just shared some big news. Cadillac is not only working on a gas-powered replacement for the CT5, but it sounds awfully like it's going to be the Cadillac version of a rumored Camaro sedan, and it will have a naturally aspirated V8 with a manual gearbox. Andrea Sells Cadillac shared the news on his Instagram reel, which also appeared to confirm that the CXTX crossover will be returning sooner than later to the Cadillac. My sources have confirmed, and I haven't heard it anywhere else, she said that the CTV is going to have a naturally aspirated V8 engine with a manual transmission as an option. She also speculated that the pricing would land somewhere in the $70,000 to $80,000 range, which would align with the current CT5V. We're a little skeptical, though, given it appears to be new info, so we reached out to Cadillac for confirmation. That naturally aspirated part is a key part of the information here. Previous to this, we'd only heard rumors about reviving the Camaro, likely as a four-door, with a potential reveal of a black wing version with a supercharged V8. The current CT5V is equipped with GM's twin-turbo V6 and is sold exclusively with an automatic transmission. Quote, we don't comment on future product speculation, and we have nothing to announce at this time, a Cadillac spokesperson confirmed via email. That said, Cadillac has confirmed that the CT5 will return to an internal combustion product in the future. So in other words, we're not hearing no. If, when, well, when's this going to bear out? Well, the first time since the Chevy SS was discontinued, GM could be offering a naturally aspirated sedan with a stick shift. Well, that would be fabulous. As a guy who drives a Corvette with a 7-speed manual transmission, I love the fact that we're thinking about bringing manual transmissions back to more cars. Well, from the pages of the website, The Drive, here's the downshift, which has all sorts of information regarding what's going on in the automotive industry. And the headline reads, Ford recalls over 500,000 Broncos for an engine fire risk. Well, here we go. Time and welcome to the downshift, The Drive's roundup that gathers the biggest automotive headlines around the globe. The downshift is summarizing stories with a couple sentences and also providing more information if you'd like to dig into it. So here's your bulletin for Friday, the 24th of July. Well, Ford has announced a recalling 5,569 2021 to 2026 Bronco SUVs, including the Raptor pickup trucks, for exposed circuits in an engine compartment wiring harness that could short and spark and potentially result in a fire, depending on the surrounding conditions. The automaker is also aware of 15 situations where this might have happened. They'll also install additional sheathing on these vehicles free of charge as a remedy. Well, Honda will pause the Civic Si and the Acura Integra A-Spec production following the 2026 year due to an EPA certification issue related to sports sedans powertrains, which notably incorporates a 6-speed manual transmissions. Fortunately, however, Honda seems confident both that both will return in the future once this little hiccup is sorted out. Well, Ford is partnering with Apple to build Apple Maps navigations into its universal EV platform, which will be an underpinning of the automaker's long-teased $30,000 electric pickup truck. It's also notable the first time that a partnership with Apple has ever been made to navigate maps into a vehicle, unlike Google, which has been baking its rival software into models for various years. So we'll see what happens with that. Stellantis is recalling precisely 641, that's right, only 641 examples of the 2026 Jeep Wrangler and Gladiator for a curious reason. Poorly manufactured wheels with thin walls which are vulnerable to cracking. The company has determined that the price vehicles are the precise vehicles which use these out-of-spec wheels and intends to replace them. Well, the National Highway Traffic Administration will not investigate the Tesla Model 3 emergency door release issue, despite a petition that the latches are difficult to locate after a crash. Well, the Volkswagen Group has cut forecast revenues for the full year after another challenging quarter in which operating profits underperformed 9.5% against the same period the year before. And General Motors is expecting $1 billion order, yes, $1 billion from the U.S. Army for 10,000 Chevy Colorado ZR2s based off of infantry squad vehicles, according to CEO Mary Barra during a earnings call earlier this week. So, wow. That's a lot of cars to order, or excuse me, say trucks to order. But I guess the military needs their vehicles, and of course, Chevrolet would be more than happy to provide those. News of Auto Blog, new cars that are likely to be running in 2040. Automakers are rapidly abandoning the tried and true engines in favor of small displacement turbocharged motors. Complex dual clutch transmissions have left many buyers wondering, will these cars actually last? Well, the ultra reliable cars that will run, built to run 15 years plus, here's some final holdouts from the new car market and the powertrains that are targeting. Well, first, let's talk about the V6 holdouts, the Nissan Series V6. While Nissan isn't always the first name associated with bulletproof reliability, its naturally aspirated VQ Series V6 is a major exception. Found in the 3.5-liter Pathfinder, the 3.8-liter Nissan Frontier pickup trucks, this engine has been refined over two decades and paired with a 9-speed automatic transmission, which also avoids the pitfalls of the older CTV transmissions, making this a rugged choice for families and truck buyers. The Honda V6 3.5-liter J35. Honda utilized the J35 V6 for 25 years. You can still find it powering heavy hitters like the Honda Odyssey, the Pilot, the Passport, the Ridgeline, and the Acura MDX. Paired with the smooth 10-speed automatic transmission, this setup requires a timing belt replacement every 100,000 miles, but its long-term durability is heavily documented. The Lexus IS350, and that has the 3.5-liter V6. Taking the crown for its longevity, the Lexus IS350, powered by the 2GRFXS 3.5-liter V6, it skips the turbochargers and the cylinder deactivation program completely, paired with either a 6-speed all-wheel drive or an 8-speed rear-wheel drive automatic transmission, widely considered one of the most robust quarter-million-mile powertrains on the market today. Let's talk about some four cylinders. The Mazda SkyActiv 2.3-liter and 2.5-liter. Mazda has spent nearly 15 years perfecting its SkyActiv engines. Founded across its lineup, the Mazda CX-5, the CX-50 crossover to the Mazda 3 and the Mazda Miata MX-5. These engines forego turbochargers in their base forms and are mated traditionally to a 6-speed automatic transmission. The mechanical simplicity has single-handedly elevated Mazda to the top of the tier of the modern reliability rankings. Let's talk about the Subaru. How about the Boxster engines, the FB20 and the FB25? Subaru has long shaken off the head gasket issues that plague some of their older models. Today's 2-liter engines and 2.5-liter flat fours found in the Subaru Crosstrek, Forester, and Outback are remarkably sturdy. While they utilize the CTV transmissions, Subaru's modern units are highly durable and provide you to stick to strict fluid maintenance schedules. The hybrid kings. Well, let's talk about the Honda 2-liter hybrid found in the Honda Civic, Accord, and the CR-V. This naturally aspirated 2-liter setup uses a direct drive hybrid system. The gas engine primarily acts as a generator for the electric motor, completely eliminated the need for the traditional transmission. Incredibly simple, low stress powertrain, and great mileage. The Toyota Dynamic Force Hybrid 1.8-liter hybrid. Well, Toyota remains the undisputed king of hybrid longevity. Their modern 2-liter and 2.5-liter Dynamic Force Hybrid engines, which powers the RAV4, the Camry, the Sienna, and the Grand Highlander, are paired with the legendary eCTV, a planetary gear set that is virtually indestructible. However, the pinnacle of proven longevity sits within the Toyota Corolla Hybrid, utilizing the older, mechanically simpler 1.8-liter four-cylinder mated to the eCTV transmission, the exact same powertrain heavily relied on by taxi fleets worldwide, and will comfortably pass 300,000 miles. The bottom line, while the automotive industry rushes toward the heavily turbocharged future, buyers are still looking for a buy-it-for-life vehicle that has fantastic options, prioritizing naturally aspirated engines, avoiding the complex turbo setups, and opting for those proven drivetrains that you can drive the vehicle off the lot that will easily see you through 15-plus years. Well, folks, I can tell you that's exactly one of the reasons that I have held on to my 2009 Toyota Tacoma pickup truck. The new trucks that started coming out 2 years ago are turbocharged and a four-cylinder, and that's not exactly what I'm looking for. I've had a turbo car before. They're fun, but they also have all sorts of idiosyncrasies that I'm not looking at in a pickup truck. So great article talking about some of these great engines and things that will last you a very, very long time. Last weekend, NASCAR returned to North Wilkesboro for a points race for the first time in, I believe, since 1996. And the headline reads, Logano dominates return to Wilkesboro. Well, Joey Logano had a gleam in his eye and a lilt in his voice as he readied to climb into the number 22 Ford Penske for the start of last Sunday's night's Window World 400. I think we have a fast car, he said, optimistically saying before he took the green flag. First time that they have raced in a points race at North Wilkesboro in 30 years. And Logano, well, he was right. His assessment turned out to be a massive understatement. After leading a single best 323 laps, Logano crossed the finish line almost a full second ahead of series leader Denny Hamlin for his first win since May of 25 when he triumphed at Texas Motor Speedway. The victory was Logano's first points race win at the track. He also won the 2024 NASCAR All-Star Race at the track in front of an enthusiastic crowd. It was his 38th Cup career victory and 23rd of all time, most of all time. It's good to get back in victory lane, Logano said. It's been a tough year for the Shell Pennzoil Mustang. Doing some big smoky donuts around this place felt really good. The victory was a distinctive bright spot in a troublesome season for the three-time NASCAR champion, who vaulted from 17th in points to 15th in the points, 49 points clear of the current cut line to make the postseason chase. Paul Wolf put a good car together. That's his crew chief. And I think he did exactly what we needed to go fast around this place. I knew coming into this weekend we had to capitalize on points, but a win was really great and really capitalizing on those tonight. So Joey Logano goes on to win the first points race at North Wilkesboro Speedway in nearly 30 years. It was interesting. After the race, Denny Hamlin came over and shook his hand and said congratulations. Of course, Denny finished in second. Both these guys are in their 40s. So a couple old guys dominating out there on the track. Chase Briscoe finished third. Ty Gibbs fourth. How about this? Shane Van Gisbergen, the road course ace, finished fifth. His first top five finish ever on a oval. Bubba Wallace in sixth, Brad Keselowski in seventh. Todd Gilliland, another Ford running good, in eighth. Daniel Suarez in ninth. And rounding out the top ten, another Ford, Ryan Priest, finished in tenth. Well, this weekend, it is the Brickyard 400 at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And the headline reads, Hocevar and Spire sweep the front row for the Brickyard 400. Well, Spire Motorsports owns the front row for the Brickyard 400. Carson Hocevar and Daniel Suarez will lead the field to the green flag, and three of the Spire Motorsports drivers qualified within the top six. It's the third career pole for Hocevar in the Cup Series, and his first at Indianapolis with three starts, and his pole winning speed was 186.598. Now, interesting, just to compare what an IndyCar does at that track, IndyCars are qualifying at nearly 230 miles an hour. So a big speed disparity between the Cup cars and the IndyCars that race at this same track. All right, so Tyler Reddick will start in third, Ty Gibbs in fourth. That's a big start for Tyler Reddick, who has been struggling after getting out to such a hot start this year. Denny Hamlin will start in fifth. Michael McDowell from Glendale, Arizona, will start in fifth. Corey Heim will start in sixth. And in eighth position is Alex Bowman. So we have two Arizona drivers starting in the top 10. And we'll be talking next week about some plans for Alex Bowman in 2027. Well, last weekend, IndyCar was set up to have a huge weekend on television. They were on Fox TV, and Fox was covering the World Cup Finals. So they were supposed to go from the World Cup Finals straight into the IndyCar race, and guess what? They had rain in Nashville that would not allow the race to happen. So they had to move the race to Monday, which was a huge disappointment, huge ratings hit. Less than a million people tuned into the race. Well, of course, it was the middle of the day on a Monday, so certainly not the audience. But Alex Palou goes on to win the IndyCar race in Nashville, followed by all three of the Penske drivers, Newgarden, Malukas, and McLaughlin. Felix Rosenquist was in fifth, Marcus Ericsson in sixth, Pato O'Ward in seventh. How about this? Mick Schumacher with his best finish of the season, the rookie, is in eighth. Round ninth was Kevin Simpson, and Kyle Kirkwood, who was your pole sitter, rounded out the top 10. For IndyCar news, it was announced last week that Dreyer and Reinbolt is going to purchase one of the charters from the Ray Hall Letterman team and run full-time. Dreyer Reinbolt has just been a Indy 500 team only for IndyCar, and they are going to go full-time racing in 2027. There's also information saying that Connor Daly is going to be their full-time driver, which I'm a big Connor fan as well. But what's interesting is now that's only two cars on the Ray Hall Letterman team. Mick Schumacher is driving for them, as well as Louis Foster and Graham Rahal. So they're only going to have time or places for two drivers, at least for the regular season. Will Graham Rahal step out of the car and move into managing, helping manage the team? I believe Louis Foster has a two-year deal, so be curious if Mick Schumacher, who is kind of having a good surge here at the end of the season, is he going to be out of a seat for 2027? So more information following on that story whenever it comes along. It's happening. Days of Thunder 2 is closing in on a director. Tom Cruise has already signed on to the Days of Thunder sequel. Now Paramount needs to hire a director. If you're riding the Ages of Nostalgia's bandwagon, a sequel to Days of Thunder is reportedly one step closer to happening. The show, because we had the Top Gun Maverick, Jerry Bruckheimer did that. He also produced the original Days of Thunder. This also has the endorsement of Jeff Gordon, and the movie is actually kind of a story about Tim Richmond, the driver who lost his life many years ago. So very interesting. It looks like we are going to bring back Days of Thunder 2, which I'm very excited about. And also, too, we're also talking about the F1 franchise bringing back a sequel to it as well. Speaking of Formula 1, Formula 1 is racing at the Hungaroring this weekend. And very excited that Lando Norris was on pole position for the race today. And I'll have those results for you next weekend. I've talked gas prices with our friends over at AAA. Well, the slightly good news, at least on a national level, gas prices are down just a smidge. Average gas price in the United States right now is $4.11 a gallon. It's not anything near that here in Arizona. Right now, the average gas price in Arizona is $4.40 a gallon. Yeah, $4.40. New Mexico, $3.99. Colorado, $4.09. Utah, $4.15. Nevada, $4.78. Our friends in California, wow, $5.63. I've got my buddy Steve up in Alaska. He's only paying $4.74 for gas. As we move to the east, Texas, $3.69, nearly almost $2 less than Arizona. Oklahoma at $3.78. Mississippi, which tends to have some pretty inexpensive gas, at $3.76. And my friends in Indiana, $3.50 average gas price there. All right, let's look around the state of Arizona and see what our gas prices are here for our individual cities and towns. Well, right now, the least expensive gas you can find in the state, I think this looks like a typo, because right now this person is reporting that he picked up gas for $3.39 at the Costco in Glendale, and that would be shocking if that's accurate. So I'm going to do a little bit more of a deep dive on that. The 76 station in Glendale is reporting $3.69. The pilot station in Courtside at $3.74. The Love's Travel Stop in Courtside at $3.74. The TA Express in Littlefield at $3.78. Costco at $3.79 in Tucson. The Marathon station in Apache Junction, $3.79. And the Thalpo station in Mojave Valley at $3.87 a gallon. All right, let's check on what's going on with our gas prices here in Metro Phoenix. My local source, Channel 15, and they're reporting the $3.39 at Costco on 79th Avenue. I am still a little skeptical of that price because that's dramatically different than what I'm seeing around the rest of the city. at least from my drive-bys yesterday. The Marathon Station, Apache Junction, which we talked about. The Arco Station on Baseline in Mesa at $3.89. Walmart in Peoria at $3.89. Costco on McDowell in Avondale at $3.89. I'm just struggling to get a 50 cents difference in gas prices from one Costco to the other. Sam's Club on Dysart Road in Avondale and the one on West McDowell in Phoenix at $3.89. Our friends over at Bucky's on Bullard Avenue in Goodyear at $3.89. And the Marathon Station on 19th Street and Osborne at $3.89 a gallon. Well, we've reached that time. Time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, my car has no energy. I have a 2011 Chevy Aveo, and the mechanics say it's because the engine is not getting enough air. He says, I need a catalytic converter. Is this right? I thought they were for exhaust, not the air intake, and that's from Susan. Well, you're right, Susan. The catalytic converter treats your exhaust to remove the combustion byproducts that are harmful to humans. But exhaust and intake are very closely related. Try this experiment. Take a really deep breath. Hold it in. And then try to breathe in some more. Well, you can't. You can't breathe any new air in until you exhaust out the old air. And that's exactly what's happening with your Chevy Aveo. Air and fuel are drawn into the cylinders. Then they're burned. Then they're exhausted through the tailpipe. If the tailpipe is blocked, well, the exhaust can't get out, and there's no room for fresh air and gasoline to get in. Now, when we were kids, a well-known prank was to stick a potato into somebody's exhaust pipe. Why a potato? Well, it was cheap, and we could steal one from our mom's kitchen, and it was pliable enough to really stop up a tailpipe. Then, when the unknowing driver would try to start his car, crank and crank and crank, get more and more frustrated, and we'd be sitting by in the bushes, snickering. Then he'd figure it out, pull out the potato, and then lay a beating on us when he could catch us, and of course, tell our mothers. Now, the catalytic converter, it's kind of acting like that potato, Susan. Over time, the internal parts of a catalytic converter, the baffles, disintegrate, and eventually they clog up the air passage, and not enough exhaust can get through. Nothing in, nothing out. And no energy, as you describe it. So your mechanic has already tested your car and determined that your converter is partially clogged and you need a new one. And given the age of your car, ask your mechanic about an aftermarket converter. They don't last as long in my experience, but he might advise you to not take a long-term bet on a 2011 Chevy Aveo either. Good luck, Susan. Yeah, that's great, great information. Also, don't forget, the NASCAR race is on TNT right now at the Brickyard. And that's all the time we have for the car show today. My name is Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday. And you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.